Welcome back to the story of Esther. This is part 2 of chapter 9, and this one is all about remembrance. Every one of us, every person, every family, every nation has events in our history that are so strikingly important, so profoundly formational, that we feel compelled to make sure that we never forget. Not us, not our families, not even our descendants. They must remember. That is the heart of Esther 9. It's why grandpa or mom or rabbi or someone tells the story every year, and they tell it on the same day every year. Remember that we left off at verse 20, but just before that, the writer was very clear about the day selection. That clarity of days is key because the rest of the chapter is all about the annual commemoration. The storyteller emphasizes here that the feast does not celebrate the day of violence. No effigies are called for, no gloating here. And that stands in great contrast to typical victory celebrations, both ancient and modern. Jesus teaches us, all who draw the sword will die by the sword. And remember again Ezekiel 18, for I take no pleasure in the death of anyone, declares the sovereign Lord. No pleasure. Bring that verse to bear in every celebration of war victory. But also know that God will have victory over his foes, and God will defend his people. Psalm 60, with God we will gain the victory, and he will trample down our enemies. Righteous vengeance is God's prerogative in both Old and New Testaments, yet the way we celebrate matters. To this day, Jews begin the Purim celebration with a fast on the 13th of Adar, the day of the battle. To this day, Jews begin the Purim celebration with a fast on the 13th of Adar, the day of battle, in honor of Esther's fast before approaching the king. Somber reflection first. They remember the battle. They celebrate the day of peace. It's right to remember, but be careful what you celebrate. And when this story arrives at celebration, it is joyful. So joyful you can feel it. All right. Enough explanation. Grandpa's mustache is now frowning in my general direction, as if to say, we could have been done by now. Sorry, Gramps. Let's finish. Esther 9, verse 20. Mordecai recorded these events, and he sent letters to all the Jews throughout the provinces of King Xerxes, near and far, to have them celebrate annually the 14th and 15th days of the month of Adar, as the time when the Jews got relief from their enemies, and as the month when their sorrow was turned into joy and their mourning into a day of celebration. He wrote them to observe the days as days of feasting and joy and giving presents of food to one another and gifts to the poor. Now there is a beautiful passage. Their sorrow was turned into joy and their mourning into celebration, the great reversal. Reminds me of that glorious refrain in Psalm 118, the Lord has done this, and it is marvelous in our eyes. Mordecai wants God's people to remember this. Remember that it happened, that God really does turn mourning to dancing. Just a few generations back, Jeremiah's lamentation recounted the turn from dancing to mourning, as the people's sin destroyed them, and the exile began. But now, the reversal. Psalm 30 makes a beautiful accompaniment to this story. You turned my wailing into dancing. You removed my sackcloth and clothed me with joy. No matter how dire your situation, never forget that our God loves the reversal. Verse 23. So the Jews agreed to continue the celebration they had begun, doing what Mordecai had written to them. For Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the enemy of all the Jews, had plotted against the Jews to destroy them, and had cast the poor, that is, the lot, for their ruin and destruction. But when the plot came to the king's attention, he issued written orders that the evil scheme Haman had devised against the Jews should come back onto his own head, and that he and his sons should be impaled on poles. And continue the celebration they did. The Jews have remembered and celebrated this story for 2.5 millennia. Think about that. How many memorial traditions around the world have persisted that long? And it's so interesting what they remember. They remember their enemy Haman. They remember the lot cast against them, that cruelty of chance that chose the day of their destruction. And they remember the reversal of Haman's plot. And then that last sentence, the impaling of Haman's sons, was gruesome, but it was also a powerful statement, a public spectacle of the Lord's enemies. And the number of them is curious. There are 10. In the Bible, 10 is the number of law, like the Ten Commandments. Think deeper here. The Jews here had a law that stood against them. Could that be a picture of God's law that stands against us all? Now, make the distinction. God's law is good. Haman's edict was evil. Yet the picture of a law that condemns to death is powerful. We sinned, and God's law declares that the wages of sin is death. Yet Colossians 2 tells us that Jesus canceled the charge of our legal indebtedness, which stood against us and condemned us. He has taken it away, nailing it to the cross. That means Jesus took everything that God's law held against us and impaled it on the cross. Back in Colossians, and having disarmed the powers and authorities, he made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them by the cross. That language sounds a whole lot like Esther 9. Disarmed, public spectacle. Could it be that the public spectacle of Haman's 10 sons foreshadows Jesus' victory over the law that condemned us? Esther wanted the world to see what the king does to those who tried to kill his bride, and Jesus wants the world to see what the King of Kings did with all that tried to kill his bride. He disarmed every power and authority that aimed to kill us. He triumphed. Am I reading too much into the death of Haman's sons? Maybe. Is Jesus' work on the cross amazing? Definitely. And for the Jews here in Esther, the very day of their death sentence has become their day of victory. What a resurrection. Verse 26. Therefore, these days were called Purim, from the word pur. And so we have the name of the great celebration to this day. Every year, Jewish families gather to retell the story, and they call the feast Purim. It's quite simply the plural of pur. In modern terms, you might call it the Feast of Dice. Funny, the word pur is actually Persian, just like Esther's name is Persian. So many elements of this story, so far from God's working, far from the temple, far from his promises, out in the world, living in another language, among another people. God's enemies are in power, the cruelties of fate and chance ruling the day. And yet, God is working. God is here. They rolled their dice against us to destroy us, and their dice rolled right back on them. Chance, fate, I don't care what you call it. God is greater. God overrules every roll of the dice, no matter how you stack the odds against us. Verse 26. Because of everything written in this letter, and because of what they had seen and what had happened to them, the Jews took it on themselves to establish the custom that they and their descendants and all who join them should without fail observe these 2 days every year in the way prescribed and at the time appointed. Interesting note, the Jews took it on themselves. Purim is the only Old Testament feast not instituted by the Lord. Is it wrong then? I don't think so. I think it's fitting. In this time when the Lord was quiet, when he was hidden, but the people saw him still faithful, they took it upon themselves to honor him and to remember. You don't have to hear his voice to know he's there, and you don't have to be told to honor his work. These days should be remembered and observed in every generation, by every family, and in every province, and in every city. And these days of Purim should never fail to be celebrated by the Jews, nor should the memory of these days die out among their descendants. And in that, another reversal. Our story began with a banquet in the citadel, nobles and insiders only. It concludes with a celebration in every family, every city, and every generation. Beautiful. The chapter closes with Queen Esther and Mordecai the Jew giving full authority to this ongoing Purim celebration and writing it to every province. And so it was established, and so it is to this very day. It is remembered. Read Esther 9. Take it upon yourself to remember those times in your life when God showed up in the hidden places and when your fate was reversed. And I'll meet you back here for Chapter 10, the Epilogue.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.